To my dearest friends, I am honored to once again welcome you to today's sermon. The true scale of the galaxy is one which few will ever be able to fully grasp. Hundreds of billions of stars glint out in the near endless expanse, only being occluded by the presence of colossal warp storms, rifts, and other cosmic horrors so large that we must only pray that they never turn their ever-starved eyes towards us. Immense clouds of celestial dust and debris will float for thousands of years, only to meet their ultimate fates within the crushing singularity of a black hole. But the vast majority of the sentient species of the galaxy cannot live within the blaring flames of a star, and neither will they find purchase through the boundless gases of a nebula. Instead, they will require a solid rock to call their own, and upon their planets, life will blossom and burst forth, providing its inhabitants with a fertile enough environment that entire civilizations can bloom. We must understand, though, that the various factions of the cosmos tend to prefer to live upon worlds which harbor an ecological bounty, from where they will be able to harvest the resources they require to propel themselves and their species towards new heights of glory. The galaxy, however, as large as it may be, does not hold an endless wellspring of planets so lush. And so, brave colonists may indeed be forced to settle upon desolate, near inhospitable grounds, and these would be known as the Death Worlds. They are planets which exist in such a treacherous, hostile state that no extraterrestrial life should be able to find a means to survive. And yet, in the grim darkness of the far future, even the most dangerous of worlds is a prize to be claimed. So great are the threats found upon these planets that if they are indeed ordained to be colonized, that the settling species will almost certainly be limited to producing only a scant few townships, as it would be simply impossible to wrangle complete control over such a godforsaken wilderness. With the horrors of these forlorn territories in mind, I do believe that we should now begin our investigations into the many death worlds of the galaxy. Firstly, I will provide a more in-depth explanation as to what a death world is, including details on the environmental or alien dangers to be found beneath their clouds. We will also consider the lives of the citizens who are now forced to endure the hardships of their most terrible existence if they were indeed born upon one of these planets. Finally, to best illustrate their Acheronian bleakness, we will look over a few examples of some of the more notable of death worlds to be found out in the great expanse. But without further ado, we must now sadly take a voyage from our own lush homes to land upon a forlorn rock kept suspended within the abyssal dark, as we learn, of the Death World. To begin with, let us learn of exactly what I mean by the term Death World. Officially, a Death World is a classification given to a planet by the Imperium of Man, where the lords of the Administratum have decreed that the world is simply too hostile to support a large-scale, planet-spanning colony effort. Every planet within the galaxy will fall under a specific designation, and these will be based upon a wide range of strategic points, including of their available resources, cultural significance, and of any key political influences which it may hold. This designatory system will encompass everything from the greatest of hive worlds through to barbarous feral worlds and even down to humble research stations left upon small, isolated planets. Omitting the uninhabited graves of dead worlds where no traces of life remain, there is no habitable classification which is seen as being more treacherous nor dangerous to the adventurous souls of humanity than of the death worlds. Imperial cartographers will further name these planets as belonging to the Delta Tau class of world. However, do not mistake this as them having any relation to the Xenos race of the Eastern Fringe who share in this name. But these designations and naming conventions only exist to serve the delicate hands of scribes who reside back in the safety of bureaucratic office habs. And in reality, no title could ever do justice to the sheer horrors to be found upon the Death Worlds. Though they may range rather wildly in their composition, there is one thing which is held as a constant between these worlds, and it is that they are near inhospitable realms of misery, in which a human will find naught but anguish and unending torment. Though alien creatures may have indeed adapted themselves to the hellish environments, having been pushed by the cruelty of evolution into becoming ever more bestial and vile themselves, the same cannot be said for mankind. Humans will rarely be able to carve out a long enough existence for themselves that they may eventually acclimate to the dangers, meaning that many will simply fall as victims to the horrors which prowl in the dark. In terms of the worlds themselves, though, they have no strict ruling as to their environmental status, as in fact any planet may have concealed such a grave threat to mankind that it will ever be safe from our own colonial exploits. We have uncovered oceanic worlds, seen as glittering blue marbles from orbit, which by all accounts appear to be somewhat beautiful against the backdrop of the void. But make no mistake, for within their abysso-pelagic depths, all manner of loathsome terrors will lurk, and they will not take kindly to the intrusion of extraterrestrial visitors. Picturesque jungle planets, thought of as being relatively safe, have routinely held horrors beyond human comprehension beneath their dark canopies, and there can be no escape for those who have become lost within their labyrinthine tangle. Colossal stalking beasts will hunt through the shrouded murk, feasting upon any hot-blooded prey they may find, and they will have no qualms over gorging on those to be found in the hapless colonies. Even simple continental worlds, which from all initial scans appeared normal, can similarly harbor an invisible danger beneath its crust. Expansive, swaying grasslands may open up from vast tectonic movements, creating gaping canyons and jagged mountain ranges through the night, as the unstable core of the planet writhes and belches forth torrents of glowing lava. Some worlds, despite seeming to be similarly conventional from first scans, may in fact be tidally locked, concealing one half of its surface within the atramentous darkness of eternal night, whilst the other will be scorched into an arid, waterless wasteland beneath the unending blare of its parental star. This was notably found to be the case upon the world of Trago, which during the Great Crusade harbored a limited population of hardy colonists upon its frozen half. Though the life expectancy of these humans was low, such was the hardy tenacity of its tough citizenship that the legions of the Astartes would routinely descend to recruit from the populace, seeing their strengths as being a vital boon to be held by their marines. Other worlds, even if they appear to reside within the Goldilocks zone of a star system with a standard orbital schedule, will in fact find itself to be constantly bombarded with destructive meteors, making it almost impossible to construct a permanent overground settlement upon its surface. As we can see, the dangers to be found on a death world may be broadly categorized between those of unpredictable tectonics, hostile environments, and of unknown alien threats. Upon a tectonic world, the very ground itself is not to be trusted, lest its racked surface simply break open under the weight of entire continents grinding against one another. Volcanoes are an incredibly common threat to be found here, with great Asperus peaks exploding outwards to reveal the boiling, liquefied lifeblood of the world, spilling forth to cool and dry into new rocky landmarks. The chasms appearing where the terrain was ripped asunder may stretch out across entire hemispheres, breaching so deeply into the world that no light may ever reach its sunken abyss. Planets buffeted by their own environments are to be seen as no safer than this. Endless bleak wastelands will have been ground down to dust by the immeasurably powerful winds roaring through the skies. Acid rains may pour out as an eternal monsoon, being so potent that even the reinforced ceramite armor of an Astartes warrior will melt away under its strength. Upon worlds with large enough bodies of water, tsunamis may prove to be the reason behind their death world status, ceaselessly sweeping inland to drown whatever pathetic vestiges of life that still remain. But just as often, a death world will actually exist as a perfected habitat towards a wide range of flora and fauna. It's just that these creatures will stand as a perpetual, near unassailable threat towards mankind. Titanic, hulking monstrosities may be found, wandering the abandoned steppe, desperately seeking a large enough meal to sate their bottomless appetites. Below these behemoths, indigenous beasts the size of battle tanks will charge through the undergrowth in horrifying packs, happy to have finally sourced the delicacy of human flesh to feast upon. Even at the bottom of the planetary food chain, swarms of minor insects numbering in the trillions may make a monumental pilgrimage across the face of the world, devouring any and all biological life they may uncover, caring not for the irreparable biological devastation they may bring. But we must not discriminate and presume that the only living beings of a world will be of those who may stride upon their many legs, as there does in fact exist a large proportion of the plant life of the galaxy, which poses just as much of a threat to humankind. We have found self-destructive flora, which simply explodes upon close examination as a most extreme defensive mechanism to the main plant. Similarly, gigantic carnivorous plants are well known to those who dwell within the more ecologically sound of death world, and although their overall appearance will be incredibly varied, they each share in their propensity to snatch and feast upon the warm flesh of mankind. With all of this being said, there does in fact exist a fourth, far rarer class of death world, which greatly falls outside of the previously defined designation system. These would include the planets which are cursed to harbor bizarre and extraordinary anomalies, which simply cannot be accurately designated to any typical framework. The worlds which possess these deviant aberrations are so rare that each one may in fact be entirely unique amidst the vast expanse of the galaxy, and yet the Imperium will inevitably find a way to exploit and utilize these exotic realms. The world of Croatoa, for instance, though appearing as a planet most uninteresting, did indeed reveal itself to be a living being. Unfortunately, we know very little about this fascinating sentient world. However, according to Imperial records, we may presume that there exists a small human colony upon its surface. Nothing would bring me more joy than to know of the potential interactions which exist between a conscious world and of its own colonizers. Yet, unfortunately, this appears to be a secret held within the forbidden chambers of the Administratum. Another of these curious, anomalous worlds would be the Adeptus Astra Telepathica training planet, known as Sycorax. Exempt from paying any form of tithe, only around 360,000 humans are found upon this turbulent rock, and yet it still plays a most vital role within the grander plan of the Imperium. Though it is completely unknown of why this occurs, the world is plagued by a constant, ravaging storm of psychic energy, which has unleashed torrents of psionic lightning since it was first discovered in our ancient past. As soon as a psychically tuned individual steps foot upon this world, they will find themselves in a most precarious position, as their own souls will act as a lightning rod towards these errant bolts. In order to survive, the psionic novice will be forced to adapt and wield their innate warp-bending skill set, lest a stray fork reduce their corporeal form to dust. Though it may seem rather cruel, the Adeptus Astra Telepathica does indeed hold a training ground upon this planet, and its overseers will force the psionic recruits of the Imperium to venture out into the storm, with only the strongest and most potent of psykers being able to protect themselves. This planet clearly plays an important part in the flourishment of the greater Imperium, thanks to its anomalous storms. However, not all Death Worlds were colonized with a strategic goal in mind. During the Dark Age of technology, humanity still possessed far more complete STC databases, and we may speculate that their advanced tools may have allowed the early colonists to withstand the horrors to be found on some of the more hostile of planets. We have obviously since lost much of this knowledge, and so some of these ancient habitats will have devolved, with its citizens being forced to adapt new methods of coexisting with the dangers. Other Death Worlds may have actually once existed in a relatively safe, fertile state, but due to the mistakes of mankind, we have since desecrated their perfection, ruining them as barren rocks for the rest of time. The world of Talarn, for instance, once harbored a lush, vibrant environment, with the grounds being so well nourished that this realm could very well have served as an exemplary agri-world. Unfortunately, however, during the chaotic days of the Horus Heresy, the traitor legion of the Iron Warriors laid siege to this jewel and ordained for the mass virus bombing of its surface from orbit. This has reduced the entirety of the world down into an inhospitable desert, with endless shifting dunes standing as the only landmarks to be seen in the wastes. Life does still persist, however, and the famed regiments of the Talon Desert Raiders will dwell within sprawling underground settlements, kept safe from the harshness of the sands above them. Despite this, it would be foolish to suggest that the Imperium and early settlers of mankind always acted with some sane sense of judgment. It is highly likely that many Death Worlds were colonized out of hubris, with the Lord simply seeing their existence as but a challenge to overcome. They would care not for the lives lost within its forlorn wastes, and instead, the pride of obtaining the naming rights to that world would be seen as the most important aspect of the entire endeavor. Some of the early colonial expeditions, however, were likely marred with ignorance as to the dangers to be found in the abyss. Spying a distant world as being even vaguely habitable was enough of an impetus to send a colony vessel, but it would have only been once the settlers first landed that the true depths of their situation would reveal itself. For example, the initial scans of a world may have revealed large lakes of fresh drinking water. However, it would only be once they landed and investigated these sites that the colonists would discover the rampant infestation of deadly parasites which dwell within, essentially cutting them off from attaining a consistent water supply. I should also note that in those ancient days, long before humanity produced its fabled warp drives, our ships would need to sail through the endless void at sublight speeds. This meant that many voyages would last for hundreds of years, forcing the crew to produce several generations of offspring whilst out in the void, lest the ship succumb to abandonment due to the cost of old age. As such, the colonists who would eventually reach their terminal destination would often be the great ancestors of the original crew. And spending many years on board a cushy vessel may have made them soft and unprepared to face off against the horrors found lurking on their destined new home. Typically, the Death Worlds will only be able to support rather limited population levels, with the largest being able to sustain around 15 million humans within their settlements. I should note, however, that this is only a rough estimate, and some planets are seen as being so incredibly hostile that only a few thousand humans may call them as their homes. As an extension of this point, the dangers to be found upon a death world will very often encroach themselves within the meager settlements of mankind. Great hulking beasts, swarms of vicious insects, and even environmental storms are all common hazards. Due to these threats, it is not unheard of for a population to be utterly devastated over the course of a short few months, reducing the once bustling colonies down to abandoned ruins, which will never again be inhabited by man. Despite the previously mentioned population limits, there do exist fascinating outliers, where some planets have seemingly overcome the odds and flourished in their own unique way. The rather infamous Death World of Krieg is well known to hold such a surprisingly vast population that they may supply around 50 million guardsmen a year to fight in the distant war zones of the galaxy. Though the planet was bathed in the nuclear fires of its great civil war during the 40th millennium, it has since returned to imperial rule, and it is from the extensive Vitae womb cloning vats that it has been able to raise such an immense populace. Make no mistake, however, for this is still a death world, and the surface is just as much of an ionized wasteland as it was all those years ago, meaning that for an undefended human to walk upon its grounds, that they will surely meet their timely demise at the hands of the invisible specter of radiation. On this point, we must now consider as to how the denizens of a death world will support the wider Imperium. It truly matters not as to how dire their situation is, as its inhabitants will still owe a duty to all of mankind, which will come in the form of the Imperial Tithe. This is a taxation of both materials and military recruits, which are to be paid yearly to the administrative lords of Terra, with there existing a harsh penalty of death for any governors who fail to meet the necessary demands. With that being said, however, not all human settlements were created equal, and as such, a meager colony upon a death world, consisting of only a few million scattered souls, will pale in comparison to a bustling, prosperous hive world. Because these planets will be so clearly lacking in their available workforce, the majority of the Death Worlds will only be ordered to provide a somewhat limited tithe, lest it deplete the harrowed community to such an extent that it cannot effectively recover in time for the next harvest. In terms of materials, many of the curious anomalies of the Death Worlds will harbor within them a treasure trove of rare resources scarcely found elsewhere within the stars. The violent tectonic movements may indeed reveal vast crystalline caves of esoteric gemstones, whose molecular structure makes them perfect candidates for producing highly effective focusing arrays for experimental laser weapons. But it will be rather difficult for the planetary governors to set up a permanent mining camp within a zone which ever shifts and closes in on itself. Because of this, many of the rare treasures of the Death Worlds will unfortunately remain untapped, since the impenetrable hazards are simply too prohibitive towards the actions of mankind. Similarly, imagine the medicinal potential to be held within the vast range of exotic plant life found at the heart of the planet-spanning jungles of Miraz 3. Extraordinary compounds could very well be isolated from some of this rare flora. However, we will likely never plumb the depths of the canopy to learn of its true usefulness. This is because the world is the home to not only a vast range of deadly wildlife, but that it has also been utterly infested by a swarm of vile gene stealers. As a result of this, research camps, small settlements, and even scouting bases have been found to be empty after but a short few days of operation, with the inhabitants having been devoured by an unseen predator. The dark jungles are now dotted with abandoned buildings, long since broken down and reclaimed by the ceaseless advance of both animal and plant life alike. Nevertheless, there is one resource which will be found upon each and every death world, and beyond all else, it is the driving force which keeps the Imperium moving forward through the darkness of the void. I would, of course, be referring to the actual citizens who dwell upon these worlds, and their indomitable human spirits cannot be shackled by the dangers to be found in the dark. The day-to-day life of a denizen of a death world will vary depending on their actual planetary conditions. However, we can safely assume that near all of them will face off against a truly arduous existence. Their survival is not something which can be possibly taken for granted. And instead, they must wholeheartedly adapt their lives towards the art of endurance, lest they fall amidst the wastes as yet another forgotten victim to the world. For planets which are utterly racked by atmospheric storms, or for those which harbor a most hostile climate, then the denizens will be forced to wear highly customized garbs in order to protect themselves from the elements. Upon volcanic worlds, thick flame-resistant boots may be worn over makeshift proximity suits, keeping the wearer safe from the overwhelming fury of lava beneath them. For noxious, toxic death worlds, the citizens may similarly be forced to equip rudimentary hazmat suits replete with fully contained rebreather systems, lest the atmosphere eat through their lungs with but a single breath. It should be rather obvious, but it does take a certain caliber of human to be able to endure the various horrors of a death world. They will have adapted to a soul-crushing existence where life must be earned and taken from the maws of a carnivorous beast. But since they have developed such an indomitable will, then it makes sense that the recruits taken from a death world will be held in high demand by the various armies of the Imperium. The Lords of the Space Marines will often designate death worlds as being recruitment planets for their chapter, allowing them to draw from a population which has already been forced to contend with horrors that would surely fell a lesser man. Sometimes, however, they will not be provided with an opportunity to plunder these hardy citizens. Many death worlds will be the home to Imperial Guard regiments, and in these cases, the tenacious might of the death worlders is often found to be more effective if they are left to their own devices. The best known example of this would likely be found upon the death world of Katakan, home to the famed jungle fighters of legend. These specialists are second to none when it comes to jungle warfare, as their entire home planet is coated by a thick, impenetrable canopy in which some of the deadliest creatures of the galaxy will lurk. Katakan devils, face eaters, and even the great barking toads will exist as a constant threat to the jungle fighters, and their perseverance against these dangers has honed them into an army without peer. As I previously stated, it can be incredibly difficult to set up a permanent colony upon a death world due to the ever-shifting nature of the dangers and horrors to be found. One must collaborate with cartographers, geologists, and even psychers to discover a location where these threats will be minimized to whatever extent possible. For example, on a dense jungle planet, the only safe zones for habitation may exist within the polar regions, where the slightly cooler temperatures prohibit the flourishment of carnivorous plants and beasts. Sometimes, areas with stable tectonics can be found, and these will be the only locations where the supporting foundations of a large-scale settlement can be placed, being safe from the typical quakes which plague the world. But regardless of where humanity has ordained to claim for itself, we must remember that even in these relatively calm zones, that they are still upon a death world, and they cannot guarantee that they will be safe for long. As such, the growth of the colonies will almost always be incredibly limited, to the point where even the smallest of cities found on a hive world will eclipse the entire populace of most death worlds. But if the planet's surface poses itself as a seemingly insurmountable obstacle, then this will not be enough to deter the intrepid yet arrogant colonists of man. A rather common solution to the dangers of a death world will be to construct a vast, sprawling network of underground settlements connected by reinforced tunnels, twisting outwards like the roots to a great tree. So long as the world's tectonics are stable, then this is a rather elegant way of avoiding the inhospitable nature of the dark surface. Though subterranean bunkers are clearly effective, some Imperials do not wish to dwell below the cracked earth, and so we will often find incredibly curious alternatives out in the vastness of the galaxy. Walking settlements, constructed by the most senior of tech priests, will stride out, keeping the populace safe within its reinforced underbelly. Vast sea bases, built within the abyssal depths of oceans, may be some of the only places not threatened by the roaming city-sized shoals of predatory fish. It has even been seen for there to be settlements raised up into low orbit, with small parties of workers being sent down to the planet's hostile surface for only a scant few hours before being forced to return to the safety of their floating homes. But regardless of where they have found purchase, the hardy settlers of mankind will still possess a place to call home. And though their lives will be nothing short of harrowing, they will be able to endure the horrors and carve out an existence for themselves amidst the living hell of a death world. Now that we understand more of what a death world is, and of the lives held by those upon them, let us explore some of the more notable of these planets, which have been discovered throughout the galaxy. The first I shall mention will be the oceanic world, known as Malmar. Found in Segmentum Obscurus, this deep cerulean orb is suspended just on the periphery of the Eye of Terror, where it seemingly exists to simply stare into that chaotic storm, taking in the horrors of the warp for all of time. But it is not its location which is notable, and instead, it is of what lurks within its depths. If one was to descend through its atmosphere, they would quickly see that this is not a world which could easily be conquered. The ceaseless, planet-spanning ocean has no end, and yet it is anything but stable. It is constantly buffeted by cataclysmic storms, twisting themselves into typhoons so strong that they could easily tear apart a hive city as if it were but damp paper. Great tsunamis will charge out in every direction, only coming to a halt when they collide with one another in a great burst of frothing water. There is little reprieve to be found once you do, in fact, breach these waves. Beneath the chaotic surface, the dim light of Malmar's distant star cannot penetrate through to the abyssal dark, leaving only the surface portion of this ocean to be illuminated during the day. The vast majority of the depths have been left uncharted, and so we can only speculate as to the horrors which surely call those trenches as their home. With all that I have said, It is difficult to think of any treasures which could possibly coax an imperial party to visit this world, and yet it is a common destination for none other than of the interrogator chaplains of the Dark Angels. When one of these fabled individuals compels a fallen angel to repent for their sins, then they will wear a black pearl to signify their accomplishment, and these have only ever been found within the dark depths of Malmar. As such, for the newly promoted chaplains, a part of their initiation will involve taking an expedition to this oceanic world before diving into its abyss in the search of a black pearl. They are said to only be found within the deadly razor reefs, inhabited by predatory crustaceans, which may grow as large as a strike cruiser. Furthermore, though we know little about this place, there exist hushed rumors that once one dives into the ocean, that they will be faced with their darkest temptations, and that only those with a strong enough heart will be able to overcome this lure, lest they fall into the briny deep to sleep amongst the fishes. The next to discuss is the curious death world of Indiga. In its ancient past, this planet previously existed as what is known as a menagerie world, meaning that it had been created to hold boundless parks, zoos, and other habitats for some of the rarest and most exotic of creatures to be found amidst the stars. The ruling governor, a man by the name Constantine Principa Argoy, had shuttled away a portion of the world's wealth to purchase small breeding groups of near every deadly species he could locate from the Imperium's vast xenological records. Initially, these were held as a prized spectacle, with the world existing as perhaps the finest and most extensive zoological exhibit in the entire galaxy. Noble visitors would come from far and wide to bear witness to his collection, and yet this time of serenity was not destined to last. One fateful day, an unprecedented quake shook and reverberated across the entirety of the world, causing the various exhibits and pens to break open, releasing their feral inhabitants into the wild. Over the following years, those vicious creatures, now free to roam, did in fact crossbreed with one another, leading to a population boom which allowed these enormous hybridized beasts to spread out and infest near every corner of the world. As it now stands today, such is the extent of their scourge that Indiga can very well be considered as a man-made death world, and yet we have still found a way to coexist with these creatures. The entire population has resorted to living within enormous mobile settlements which trundle out across the surface, keeping their distance from the deadly supercolonies of hybridized horrors. Much of their society has seemingly become based around the operation and maintenance of these mobile crafts. However, that has not prevented them from producing a famed regiment of the Imperial Guard. The Indigan prefects have been deployed primarily to defend the moving settlements from the frequent attacks of the previously described hybrids, but thanks to this, they have become incredibly adept at slaying the alien horrors of the galaxy. They excel during campaigns focused around the Tyranid menace, with the battle-tested tactics of their homeworld proving to be invaluable in taking down the largest of extragalactic bioforms. Rather interestingly, there exists an organization upon this world known as the Indigan Xeno Safari Tourist Board, which offers a wide range of tours, hikes, and hunting trips for the adventurous nobles of the Imperium. If one can afford its fee, then they will be escorted around the feral wilderness of Indiga to hunt and slay a legendary hybrid, even being permitted to take back a prized trophy to be mounted within their home. Unfortunately, however, whilst this used to be a thriving business venture, a recently received astropathic call did not contain the usual advertisements as expected. Instead, it showed only broken, empty cages, and in the background, faint cries and screams could be heard, barely audible over the deafening roars of exotic beasts. The third death world of today is known as Carrick, found in the Calyxis sector of Segmentum Obscurus. It exists as the sole planet within the local star system. However, due to its relatively distant orbit, the world is utterly frigid, with its surface only barely raising above 0 degrees during the day. Naturally, both of its poles have frozen into permanent ice caps, leaving the only habitable zone as the equator, which is constantly buffeted by blizzards and ice storms, blown down from the frosty tempests at the caps. Carrick is only around half the size of Holy Terra, and yet its gravity is far higher, meaning that the inhabitants of this world are somewhat stockier when compared to a typical human. As a result of this, however, the planet is used to raise and train Ogryns, who will be sent out to the various regiments of the Imperial Guard as the sole form of military tithe owed by this world. Due to the unending cold, only an incredibly limited amount of food can be reliably grown within their settlements, and so the vast majority of their nutrition will come from agri-imports taken from the orbiting pearl moon above them. This is an oceanic agri-moon, which supplies much of the Calyxis sector with plankton, algae, and other seafoods necessary to sustain their struggling populations. Returning to Carrick, however, it has been colloquially named by its citizens as the Pocked World, as it is constantly buffeted by the vast asteroid field which co-inhabits its celestial orbit. Though the Planetary Defense Force keeps a constant vigil with orbital defense stations, they cannot possibly shoot down every meteor, making these apocalyptic strikes an all too common occurrence. Entire settlements have been levied, with thousands being lost within the chaos of the bombardment. But this is just part and parcel of life upon a death world. I should note that whilst around 10.5 million humans will call Carrick as their home, they are not the sole inhabitants of its icy fields. Upon its surface, we will find the frozen ruins of an Orc spacecraft. And from this crash site, the Greenskins have marched outwards to the point where they are now a rampant infestation. Thankfully, however, though the Orcs are indeed prevalent, they do not pose as much of a threat to the humans here as we may think. The frigid weather inhibits the growth of the fungal spores, meaning that new Orcs can only appear during the warmest of summer months in a select few regions. Furthermore, the Planetary Defense Forces will routinely set out on purgation missions into these warmer areas, carrying heavy flamers to burn away any Orcoid trace that they may uncover. Despite the fact that one will freeze to death if they leave a settlement uncovered, or that they may fall victim to a meteor strike, that they could starve to death, or that an Orc attack could claim them, life upon Carrick actually seems to be rather peaceful. Its population has banded together against the oppressive odds, forming a relatively pleasant existence for themselves, with the horrors of the death world being but simple challenges to overcome. The final death world we shall investigate is to be known as Nox Alpha. Found within the outskirts of the Mobian domain, we know very little about its founding, nor of its role within the sector. However, it was one of the worlds which soon became embroiled within a large-scale campaign known as the Fringe War. This has been an ongoing conflict which was intended to suppress the various horrors to be found in the colonies which surrounded the capital hive world of Atoma Prime. However, it seems to be a mission which will prove itself to be without end. As I stated, our records as to the early history of Nox Alpha are somewhat limited, but we do know that it was once inhabited by human colonists, likely being reclaimed for the Imperium during the days of the Great Crusade, just as was the case with Atoma Prime. Upon its surface, we will find a realm most hostile, with there being such a myriad of dangers that it almost appears as if the world itself wishes to be free from its inhabitants. Within the constantly flowing winds, there is a pox most deadly. We do not know if this is a singular disease, or if it is simply an amalgam of several lesser infections accompanying a range of pollutants, but to breathe this noxious air is to condemn yourself to a sentence of certain death. One of the resulting pathologies brought about by its inhalation is known as Langer's cough, which may give rise to a condition where one's abdomen becomes infested with bloated maggots, desperate to flee from their fleshy prison. Even with an advanced rebreather system, it can be easy to become lost within the wastes of this world. We are not sure as to why this occurs, but the planet will occasionally be shrouded in an impenetrable darkness, with the light of the distant star being occluded by a mysterious fog. Those caught within this Stygian gloom reported that they would hear echoing voices, and that horrifying apparitions would manifest themselves, only being visible for but a brief moment before melting away back into the dark. There exists an entire region of this world known as the Tenebrous Area, and thus far it appears that this darkness never ceases, almost as if light was never destined to grace that which lurks within it. Within the sprawling labyrinth of the Grundrak Forest, there were similarly found to be otherworldly terrors. Very few of the deployed veterans would ever report as to exactly what they found within its depths. But it soon became clear that any who ventured into its tangle would be met with vile beasts, and that death would be sure to restrict them from ever returning. The guardsmen who were sent to pacify the threats of Nox Alpha were known as the Mobian Sixth. However, their stay was ultimately one which became marred by the taint of chaos. Many of the guard found that they would be granted salvation from the waves of disease if they did indeed hark the whispered messages called out from the dark. And from these words did half of their regiment fall under the sway of Nurgle. The ensuing civil war was won out by these corrupted scions, and as it now stands, the members of the Mobian Sixth have dedicated themselves to the chaos god of pestilence, suggesting that the world of Nox Alpha was indeed tainted by the dark touch of the Plague Father. Carrying his corrupted gifts, their regiment has departed from this virulent realm, and are now staging a wide-scale uprising upon Atoma Prime, with only the personal retinue and penal forces of Inquisitor Grendel standing to bring justice to the loathsome traitors. My dearest friends, thus ends today's sermon on the topic of the Death Worlds of the Galaxy. Truly, it is challenging to think of any place more hostile nor deadly than of these treacherous planets. Perhaps only the forsaken demon worlds of the warp could possibly contend with their dangers. But for the various planets of the material realm, then almost none would ever choose to live upon their surface. Despite their horrors, however, as we have learned, there can be a great many benefits to be found if one is able to look beyond the clear perils. Rare resources, strategic locations, and even hardy human recruits are things which are too valuable to look beyond. And so, these worlds will still play a vital role within the flourishing growth of the greater Imperium. I should note, however, that there are some who do not agree with the idea that Death Worlder recruits are inherently superior to those found on more civilized worlds. Robut Gilliman, Primarch of the Ultramarines, seemed to believe that the conditions upon a death world may be so dire that its inhabitants would have no true reason to refuse the tempting offers of demons. Since there could be no logic in refusing an offer from hell if they already dwell within it. But regardless of this opinion, we must admit that the vast majority of humans found upon the death worlds have proven themselves as being some of the hardiest and most tenacious examples of mankind's glory ever found throughout the void. They have persevered for generations against the odds, with nature itself acting as their enemy, and yet they refuse to go quietly, instead standing tall and resolute against the horrors of the dark. It now seems, however, that I must yet again bring a close to this chapter. My dearest friends, I thank you all for listening to this tale to its conclusion. And I hope that the stories of treacherous death worlds were as entertaining to hear as they were to write. But until next time, I wish you all goodbye.